Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be. Listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Good morning and welcome to the show. We've got a very good show for you today, and we're going to start with the interview. I'd like to introduce you to Mark Nepo. Mark is a New York Times best-selling author, poet, and philosopher. His book, The Book of Awakening, is currently number 12 on the New York Times bestsellers list. In 2010, Oprah Winfrey featured The Book of Awakening on her ultimate favorite Things show. His latest book is called As Far as the Heart Can See, and his upcoming book, which will be released in September of 2012 by Simon & Schuster, is called 7,000 Ways to Listen. You can go to Mark's website, marknepo.com, to see all that he's written and to learn about his speaking engagements. We're going to be talking a bit today about the tagline for the book, The Book of Awakening, ways to be, to have the life you want by being fully present to the life you have. So, Mark, welcome to the show, and thank you for coming.
Oh, it's great to be here with you, Mariana. Really, it's a joy.
That's great. I'd like to begin the journey of awakening, I'm calling it today, with a sense of gratitude, really, for being incarnate here and now as a human being. And I'm wondering if you could help us get there by sharing that there's a Buddhist story that you tell about how rare it is to be born as human.
Sure. It is. And I think, you know, as you say, I mean, wakefulness starts with our just remembering again and again our appreciation for really how rare it is to be here at all.
Right.
And, and I'll tell that story, but I mean, just to say, you know, as you know from my work and many readers know that I'm a cancer survivor. And, you know, and after all of that, I've come to, like, really feel there's really no bad weather. You know, the only bad weather is no weather. It just puts things in a different perspective. But this story is that one of the stories of Buddha is that one of his students came and asked him, how rare is it to be born as a human being? And Buddha said, supposedly, imagine a tortoise in the ocean, on the bottom of the ocean, and it wakes and it slowly rises and breaks surface, looks around, and then comes back down to the bottom and goes back to sleep and wakes a second time and now is moved back to the surface. The odds of it breaking surface in the same exact spot twice, that's how rare it is to be born in human form.
Mm-hmm. Each time I hear this story, it doesn't matter, it's fresh every time. I'm just struck.
Well, it's a bit, it's, you know, and what it again, you know, suggests is that, you know, in a world, and I'm the first person, I love all the new technology, so I don't want to give it all up. But one of the things I think we need to be aware of is that when we don't meet it with our own presence and inner journey, the structure and habits of the technology inadvertently become our values. So, you know, we can record anything, we can stop it, we can replay it. But all of that to say, what this beautiful little story says, life is unrepeatable.
Mm-hmm.
Every moment is unique and rare. And, you know, that can fill us with terror on the one hand, but it also fills us with wonder and awe at how precious everything is and how it requires and asks of us constantly to show up all the time.
Right. I'm noticing even now, just being fully present, one of the tools that I'm using is my breath. You know, this we get into moments where, I don't know, life just is busy and we're moving fast. Maybe even, you know, at times our heart rate is up. There's a little anxiety. But when I stop for a moment, just the topic you and I are talking about is reminding me to slow my breath down for a moment. And then suddenly, here I am, fully present in this moment, in this interview, fully and completely with you.
Yeah, you know, and the breath as well, of course, all the traditions speak about breath and contemplative and meditative practices, and you know, they've worked for thousands of years. But even, you know, the metaphor of it, just physically, because when we breathe, it's at the same time our breath, but of course we're taking in the air that's everywhere.
Oh.
And when we exhale, what was now our breath is mixing with everything out there. So when we slow down, we return to being an inlet where the individual soul is constantly mixing who and what we are with everything that is not us, with everything that is larger than us. And, you know, it's like taking, so when we take an emotional breath, if you will, or a mental breath, you know, or a memory breath, when we slow down enough, or a nature breath, we're doing the same thing. We're allowing everything larger than us to move inside us, take a piece of us, help restore us, and then as we exhale, we offer something back out into the world.
Right, it's this dance of giving and receiving in every breath we take. In every breath we take. And when you were speaking, it also made me think about what a metaphor, it's more than a metaphor, what a real experience this is of oneness. Like we're all sharing breath together.
That's well, I think that, you know, one of the things that I'm learning as I get older is that, and after just, you know, staying on the journey and falling down and getting up, but I mean, one of the things I'm learning is that, you know, being awake, in addition to allowing us to experience more, in addition to our relationships being more real and integral, being fully present and authentic is kind of the admission ticket to experiencing oneness.
Right. Right.
We can, you know, we have these amazing things, minds, and we can comprehend oneness, but that's not the same thing as experiencing oneness.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it makes me think again about meditation when you're in that place of doing, you know, for me anyway, my breath is the thing that takes me kind of one layer or two layers or three layers deeper than the surface world when I'm moving into a meditation. And then, of course, in that experience, we feel a connection to let's say we're in a room with a group of people meditating, we feel the experience of oneness with everyone in that room so palpably when we come out of the meditation and begin to open our eyes and look around.
Well, and I think that, you know, there's a paradox, and I talk about paradox a lot because they continue to be the greatest teachers. And, you know, a paradox, among many ways of speaking about that, it's the moment when more than one thing is true.
Mm.
And how do we hold that? And our mind can't hold it, only our heart can. But one of the paradoxes about meditation and practice is practice is always for living. The practice itself isn't always living. I mean, the practice is valuable, and then how do we bring it into our lives?
Right.
So it's so important, yes, to practice till we can feel our breath, till we can still our minds, but then how do we go, and, you know, very little is actually, you know, urgent in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if someone is bleeding or they can't breathe, that's urgent. You know, that requires speed and action immediately. But most everything else, though it feels urgent, we can take that breath that we practice somewhere else and use it, inhabit it, wherever we are.
Right.
And we don't, you know, all of us, I don't, you know, we forget that. We don't use it. And so I think maybe, you know, one of the most important practices in wakefulness is the constant awareness to try, and I say try because we're human, so we don't always do it, but to try to integrate when we're out there, you know, in the gas line or in the supermarket or waiting at, you know, at a doctor's office when we don't feel well.
Right. You know, I'm remembering when I was doing facilitating support groups with adults who were in grief. I was often in a room with 8 or 9. They were parents of usually young children, and somebody important had died in their life. Either a child had died or a spouse had died. Those were the most common ones. Sometimes it was a parent who had died. And there were times when the, you know, and one person was speaking. We had a talking stick. So we were, you know, 9 people holding space for one who was sharing something about their grief experience and journey. And you can imagine, you know, there were times as a facilitator, my heart was beating fast and I'd be hearing a hard story to hear, and I want to be of service in some way that is well received and useful and welcomed by the person who's speaking. And in my desire to want to do something, it was hard to be present, and it was my breath. It was years of practicing meditation that actually kicked in, and it was my breath that began to almost operate on its own. I began slowly doing a deep inhalation and exhalation, and pretty soon, you know, my heart rate slowed down, and I found that my mind wasn't thinking of other things. I really was fully present and available to this present moment, this one person in this very room hearing this very story.
Mm, yeah. And, you know, let me take a moment here, because you're, you know, Mariana, you're so kind to interview people like me and everything, but I just want to note that the work that you have done on your own and your own wisdom, and would like to alert people to your book on how to walk with grief with a loved one. As long as you bring that up, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. The book is called Being There for Someone in Grief, and you can learn more about it. You can go to my website, which is my name, or you can Google Being There for Someone in Grief. Thank you so much, Mark. I'm wondering, Mark, if you can give us a little bit of background on your own life, particularly the time during your cancer journey when I remember you had a little sort of chat with God and made a deal. If you survived, you promised to really be here. Can you tell a little bit about that and
sure.
what the journey was like?
Sure. Well, you know, I'm 60, and it's now going on, it is 24 years plus since the heart of my cancer journey. It's hard to believe it's almost a quarter of a century, and it feels a long time ago, and it feels like yesterday. And, you know, I was in my mid-30s when I found myself with a large growth, which turned out to be a tumor, growing in my skull bone on the right back side of my head, and it grew quite large. It was like the size of a grapefruit, both pushing in on my brain and growing out. And it turned out that it was a rare form of lymphoma. And so I went through what turned out to be almost a 3-year intense journey, where I almost died. And, you know, the first part was that this tumor, which was rare and inexplicable, you know, I was very close to having a craniotomy, which is brain surgery. And the side effects that were greatly possible were loss of memory and speech, which kind of are like knees to a quarterback for a poet. and also I had never been ill, you know, so I was terrified of everything.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Of everything. You know, my middle name was Put Me Out. Everyone along the way I met, I would say, just, you know, put me out. And, of course, my karma was that, and I think I share this because of our topic about wakefulness, I couldn't be put out because no one knew what they would find in that tumor if they opened it. They had to not use anesthetic or anesthesia in case they needed to operate once they opened it. And, you know, within a short time frame, they couldn't use it twice. So all of the tests and everything I had to go through, I had to go through awake. Which, even in my 30s, it wasn't lost on me. And so that, yeah, so I needed to be awake to move through this. And so the first thing I learned through that was the gift of impermanence. You know, we learn about impermanence, especially the Buddhists talk about impermanence, and we think, of course, immediately it means we're all going to die, which we will. But within a life, impermanence means that nothing, not pain, not fear, nothing will last or stay the same.
Right.
And I learned very early on that terror is when we get locked into a moment of fear and we believe that, okay, this is the way it's going to be forever. I will never get out of this moment of fear or pain. That's terror. But, and you know, and this is not to say, I mean, we won't go down that road right now, but there's a whole other kind of pain, chronic pain, and how people deal with that. That's a whole other incredible issue that deserves our compassion and attention.
Right.
But I'm talking here about passages and moments of fear and pain. So I, you know, I learned that even though I hated it and I didn't like it and I was terrified, it would pass. It would pass. So I went through this, and the tumor in my skull, after all kinds of tests and procedures and an open biopsy, the tumor vanished. And it was a miracle.
Right.
And I was thrown back into life like Jonah spit out of the mouth of the whale. Except there was no... the life I had entered this journey from was gone.
Right.
There was no life to return to that I knew of.
Right.
I was And so one of the things here was that in the midst of this, there were several times where I was thrown below all names through fear, through pain, through coming close to dying. There were moments where I forgot my name, where I was the spirit underneath all the names I could be given.
Mm-hmm.
And so coming back into life, yes, I'm Mark, and I respond to that name. But that name is a doorway to all that is unnameable that is in me and that I move through life with.
Right.
So within a year of being thrown back into life, there was a sister tumor that was on my back, on the eighth rib of my back on the left side. And, you know, the tumor on my brain was so dramatic that nobody, even me, I mean, I had access to all the films, and nobody noticed this little bump on that rib. And so within about 10 months, that started to grow, and it was a tumor on my rib. And, you know, there I was, and that was my deepest moment of despair, because I felt, did I blow the miracle? Did I not do something that I was supposed to do? I don't need another wake-up call. And then I was afraid I might die.
Right.
And then I learned that miracle is a process and not an event.
Mm.
Because now I had to go to a thoracic surgeon who removed that rib and its adjacent muscles. And now I realized the surgeon was part of the miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to have aggressive chemotherapy, and even the damn chemo was part of the miracle. And after 4 months of very aggressive chemo, which started to kill me, I had to stop and say, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. And it had started to give me neuropathy, which is a deadening of the nerve endings in your body, and it also gave me an ulcer on my esophagus. And so then I was thrust again back into life.
Mark, I'm going to stop you for just one moment, because
sure.
I want to continue with this thrust back into life and hear where this takes you, and we have to stop for a break.
Sure.
So to our listeners, if you have any questions for Mark, feel free to go to bfjradio@gmail.com. We'll come back in a couple of minutes and speak more with Mark. Please stay with us.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
There are a number of health and social services available to individuals for low cost or no cost. Now there's a radio program devoted to bringing you the information you need. Tune in to Outreach Today with host Melissa Jenkins-Simon. Our program promotes the benefits and services of CI Incorporated, providing health and social services over a wide spectrum of resources and agencies. We want to help you. Tune in to Outreach Today, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you are listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
Step into the doorway to conscious choice, greater health, and well-being. Attain the balance that you've been seeking. Tune in and turn on 1111 Talk Radio. Feed the mind. Embrace positively. Release the tension. Step out of fear. Host Simran Singh will help you broaden your mind and open your heart toward a greater understanding of how to take charge of your life. 1111 Talk Radio is here every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on Seventh Wave Network. 1111 Talk Radio, because shift happens.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
We're back, and we're talking to Mark Nepo, New York Times bestselling author. His book, The Book of Awakening, is currently number 12 on the New York Times bestsellers list. And he has been sharing with us a story of his own cancer journey. And at some point, he was just before the break, he was talking about being thrust back into life. So, Mark, let's continue with that conversation, that story that you were sharing with us.
Well, sure. And, you know, and I think that this bears on our talk about wakefulness and having the life you want by being present to the life you have. You know, we don't really have any other choice but to be present to the life we have. We think we do. You know, we dream of everything from constructing pyramids to, you know, conquering Mount Everest, to making millions, to all kinds of things. But the truth is, you know, other than being fully present and caring and giving our best, we don't have a lot of control. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself back in life where I had, you know, been in my 30s, my mid-30s, and I was trying to contribute and help change the world. And all of a sudden, the world was changing me.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, the world was opening me, and through that opening, I have, paradoxically, been able to make a greater contribution for having been opened.
Mm-hmm, right.
And, you know, I think that the things, among many, that came out of my cancer journey was that, one was that, through no wisdom of mine, I woke up, and like snow melting into the ground in March, you know, I was living more in my head, and that all melted into my heart. And from that point forward, you know, I'd like to say there was some wisdom that I realized that that was more powerful living from my heart, but it just happened because of what I went through.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I live lower. I live from the center of my chest. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that, you know, I was blessed. I'm Jewish. I was raised Jewish. I practice everything. And that comes out of this journey because I was blessed to have people from all faiths and all traditions offer help, prayer, all kinds of support. So blessed to still be here. I knew immediately that I was and I am not wise enough to know what worked and what didn't. And I was faced with the challenge to believe in everything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And all my work in the last 24 years, my books, my teaching, has been centered on a devotion to uncovering and sharing where all the traditions meet in the middle. Out of what common center do they come, and how can we make use of them in our daily lives?
And you so beautifully, inspiringly articulate that in the things that you write, from your poetry to your nonfiction to your fiction. And even, you know, you and I are friends and we've spent time together, you and Susan, your wife, and I. And even just in average daily conversation, the way in which I find myself going deeper with you than I do with most other people. It's so true. You just completely live it.
Well, thank you. Let me share. I actually wrote a poem this morning, I'm just embarking on a writing sabbatical for about 3 months, which I'm real excited about to have some time carved out. So this poem came, and these poems come through being open. I don't really feel anymore that I author these as much as I am in conversation with life, and the words are the trail of that conversation. So this is called Winter Confession. I've tried to follow every wind and listen for its source. I've tried to follow every light and with my face in the sun, all the things we carry that are afraid of the light scurry to the back of my mind. I've tried to find the truth, and when I have, I've found it's everywhere, and that I step over it in my pain or want for something I can't have. Thankfully, there have been ordinary blessings. When I followed your presence into what would be our love, when I took a left in the path that led to the sea, and stayed there for days, putting down all the names I'd been given. How months later, while dropping a book of poems, a wet clump of grass stained the instruction there to speak plainly. And the small light that brought me back while I was in surgery. It was a crack of dawn promising so much if I could just get up and walk beyond death's slim tree. And here I am, all these years later, mouth open, still in awe. Yesterday, in the pines, my dog put her nose in the snow. What a teacher. I slipped to one knee and did the same.
Oh, quite beautiful.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
But you know, I think that there is always a thread of light nearby.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean, as you well know, and you do this so well in your work around grief with people, but it doesn't mean that we turn to the light instead of the dark. Life is this complicated, beautiful, mysterious, inextricable fabric of light and dark, of joy and pain, of love and suffering. And it's understandable that as human beings, we'd like to separate that out. And people have been trying to do that since the beginning of time. And you know what? It doesn't work.
Right.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
You know? Go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I apologize. I just wanted our listeners, you're saying this, and I was earlier today on your website, on the front page of your website, you have a little video of a clip of an interview with Oprah, and she reads one of the segments from a book of awakening, and then you share a very similar piece about, you know, being whatever experience you're going through in a difficult, painful place or something happening for you, and then noticing sitting in your chair at the window a bird coming to land.
Well, yeah, this was a very, recently, that is in the last couple of years, I'm fine now, but I went through another kind of very, very difficult physical journey with my stomach, and I'm fine now. But I had this situation where I would get these very deep pains in my stomach, and they were unpredictable. I wouldn't know when they would appear. And You know, it was summertime, and we have bird feeders. Many people do, and, you know, we love when all the birds come. And during the summer, where we are, one or two days a year, these Baltimore Orioles come. Now, they're brilliant birds. So the Oriole came to the feeder, and just as I was looking at the Oriole, one of these painful attacks came.
Mm-hmm.
And there we have it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There we are. Okay, you know, both are real. I can't deny the pain, but nor can I deny the beauty of the Oriole.
Right.
And it's not just to honor the beauty, it's that the beauty of the Oriole is medicine. And it's understandable that moments of pain grab all of our attention in their intensity. And then, as they shift and the intense moment starts to pass, now what do we do? I don't want to deny my pain, but I need to be able to let in that beauty. And we are faced with these choices in more subtle forms every day. Every day. You know,
every minute of every day.
Every minute of every day. You know, sometimes in the world, you know, there is such a need for justice so many times. There has always been in every era.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, rarely, justice and healing are the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But often, they are not. Why that is so, I don't know. But that it is so, I do know. And therefore, one of the practices of being human is we are faced often to choose between justice and healing.
Give me an example.
Well, an example is, you know, because we've shared at different times, you know, I've had a very kind of difficult journey with growing up with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know for how many years, you know, I kept the wounds of that journey open as evidence for a trial that would never come.
Mm.
So what was I doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the wounds would start to heal, and I would keep them open. So it'd be fresh evidence when that law and order trial would come. But the trial never came.
Right.
And now I was faced with, yes, from my perspective, whatever I went through was unjust. It hurt. But at some point, I had to choose between justice and healing.
Right.
Everything about life and about my own nature wanted to heal. And I kept opening it, the wounds.
Mm-hmm.
To keep them fresh and clear and memorable so I could make that account when the time would come.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the between judgment and compassion. Now again, it doesn't mean that people aren't accountable.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a cheap form of forgiveness. But it means, where do we live? Whether it's those kind of wounds, or it's the physical stomach pain and the bird, do we live in the wound and in the pain, or do we live in the greater miracle that can hold our pain?
Right.
Not denying either. I think we tend in our world to go to extremes. You know, we either try to skip over the suffering, and that's a kind of Pollyanna view of the world, a world of denial. Or we drown in the pain and we become pessimistic and nihilistic.
Right, I think this is, we're going to have to take a break in a minute, but I think this is that the development of kind of a porous heart where we actually can hold it all. We see and feel and are in whatever, not to deny, whatever it is that breaks our heart.
Yeah, and that leads us to generosity.
That's right. That's right. So I'll take this opportunity. We'll come back and talk more in a few minutes with Mark Meeple. We're going to take a break. If you have a question or comment, you can email us at bfjradio@gmail.com. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
Who or what fills you up? How do you talk to yourself about yourself? Do you feel like your life isn't where you want it to be? That you are underappreciated or that your relationships leave you wanting? Tune in every week as Dr. Debbie gives you something to think about. A reality check that will allow you to take charge of what goes on in your life. Your life is happening now. Don't waste another minute. Tune in Mondays at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. And listen to It's About You with Dr. Debbie.
Explore the power and beauty in yourself and in others. Tune in to The Stacey Stern Show, Enriching You. Every week, Stacey Stern will connect you with men and women who are living and working from a place of passion. Stacey's guests include successful authors, filmmakers, actors, experts, and leaders. You'll hear what inspires each of them, and you'll be turned on to great films, books, and new media. Tune in to The Stacey Stern Show, Enriching You, Tuesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back. We're here with my dear friend, Mark Meeple, author of the Book of Awakening, which is currently number 12 on the New York Times bestsellers list. And we just talked about this experience of opening into kind of a porous heart, being able to hold what it is, that brings us kind of sorrow and pain, whether it's our own sorrow and pain or what we feel when we see a homeless person on the street, and then those things that connect us to others and bring us hope and give us, I don't know, life and enrich our lives.
We were talking about. I mean, one of the things here that and this is where, you know, I think in some ways the distortion of even you know, our fundamental, you know, in the, you know, Declaration of Independence, that, you know, the inalienable rights and the, you know, we all have this right to be happy. Well, that's been distorted, and we do, but I think that's been distorted over time into an entitlement to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
happiness all by itself is overrated,
mm-hmm.
because it is not by itself, just as any one mood or feeling is not by itself the entire human experience. Joy, to me, is much deeper and lasting than happiness. But all of this to say that the suffering that we encounter, and I'm not like a cheerleader for suffering, it's more like spiritual physics. It's like there's gravity. It's not debatable. There's gravity. There's suffering. Mm-hmm. That goes with the landscape. That's kind of how it is.
Right.
So how do we deal with it, and how do we help each other? And suffering, in my experience, enlarges the heart. Everything I've ever been through has extended the ground of compassion that I'm able to be with in the world. You know, after going through cancer, I can never not have compassion for anyone in a life-threatening situation. You know, I went through a period where I was overweight, and I think that's a relative term. I was overweight for me, whatever that meant. I didn't feel comfortable. You know, I was more than I felt comfortable with. Well, you know, having been through that, and I've lost that weight over years back to whatever is normal for me, I can never not have compassion for anyone who is more than they would like to be.
Right.
Because I realize, having been through it, nobody like decides they're going to be overweight. you wake up one day and all of a sudden you're in this larger thing that's you.
Right.
And it's like, how did this happen? And now how do I change this?
Mm-hmm.
So now I have, you know, and having been through what I went through with my stomach, my God, you know, I was blessed because this stomach condition I had resolved itself, but it's a condition that can be chronic. And my heart goes out. I don't know how people live like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So this all leads to with something that is, you know, we both are connected with. This leads to generosity, and I think to, you know, the more compassion we have, which literally the word means being with.
Mm-hmm.
It means keeping company. So the more compassion we have, the more we accept that we can just be with people, the more it leads to us, you know, wanting to help each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so that leads to what I feel is one of the challenges of our age, is staying in relationship.
Right. It's really what the work of our Bread for the Journey chapters are doing. We're about to open a new chapter in Washington, D.C. called Planting Seeds, a Bread for the Journey chapter. And this is a young man who, through his church, actually became involved in serving a homeless population. I think they were giving them shelter in cold winter nights at the church, and he began volunteering.
Amazing.
And one thing led to another, and he began to develop a deeper relationship with these, you know, these people who had lost everything. And now he's about to gather together a few friends and open a chapter of Bread for the Journey. And, you know, this small band of people will reach out to the people they know, their friends and colleagues, and invite them to contribute. Either, you know, maybe those people know somebody that needs some help, or they're able to contribute a few dollars, and together with their little pool of money, they'll help in various ways, you know, whether it be to get somebody back into a home, to help them out, understanding, you know, getting down and taking a look at the economics of that person's life and getting them back on track financially, or all manner of things.
Well, and you know, and Mariana, you know that I'm a kind of a Bread for the Journey a groupie, and have been for years. And and for folks who are, you know, listening, I think, I mean, Bread for the Journey, which is an amazing organization all over the country of folks helping folks. And, you know, started it by our, you know, dear friend Wayne Muller years ago, and his belief in the small gesture, the small kindness, mm-hmm. that matters. And what I so love about Bread for the Journey is that it listens with heart to people and just tries to give the one missing piece that will make something work.
Right. And so much of it around relationship. We enter into relationship with the people in the community who are in need, or the people in the community who have who are creating a program to help those in need. There's no written grant proposals. The grants that we give are small amounts. They're maybe 1,000 or 1,500. But we enter into that relationship with the person, and there's something that grows out of that has roots that grows deep. And that brings a kind of healing that can't be gotten any other way than to really be present and available. And I think, you know, getting back to what we were talking about earlier, this business of how do we keeping our hearts open to the kind of sorrows of life, and at the same time awake to the birds that land on the bird on the windowsill, you know. How do we invite other into our life? This is one of the most beautiful ways that the people who are involved in Bread for the Journey do just that. Thank you for your kind words about Bread for the Journey, Mark.
No, sure. And I think, you know, and I've seen this in the things that we've witnessed through Bread for the Journey, and you know, I think the other reward for kindness, there are two other, you know, obviously when we help, the help that goes to people when it's their turn to be in need and our turn to give is in itself a reward. But the other two kind of always rewards for giving is that giving is medicine for us.
Mm.
Giving heals us. And the other thing is that kindness reveals kinship. Kindness, the act of kindness, reveals how like kind. It gives us connection to everything greater than us and everything else that is kind, you know, in the universe. And I think that, you know, it's just a really powerful thing in such small things. I remember one, it's probably years ago, but one of the hundreds of kind of Bread for the Journey projects, and it was in Santa Fe or in New Mexico somewhere, but I think it was the Santa Fe chapter. But anyway, there was a local small town that had a drug problem with its teenagers, and the elders in the town were creating a youth center to give the kids some place to be, to pull the culture away from the drug scene.
Right.
And they had everything. They had it all ready to go. They had everything built, and they couldn't open it because they ran out of money and they couldn't afford lights. They couldn't afford floodlights. And the chapter gave them like $300 for floodlights, and they opened the center. And, you know, within a few years, the kids, the whole culture shifted. So just for $300,
right,
you know, this giving of the one small thing that made the whole thing happen.
Right. We have hundreds of stories like that. If you go to Bread for the Journey, for those who are listening, if you go to breadforthejourney.org's website and click on success stories, you'll be able to read story after story of things that have happened all around the country where small amounts of money made a big difference.
Well, and you know, let me offer, this is, it's part of a poem, one of my poems, it's a stanza, but it goes, "The mystery is that whoever shows up when we dare to give has exactly what we need hidden in their trouble."
That is exactly, exactly the whole story encapsulated, as a poet would do, in a few small words. I'm really delighted with that. Mark, we've got just about 4 minutes till closing, and I've got a few closing things I want and need to say, so I'd like to use this opportunity to kind of wrap up and to say thank you so much for the time that you gave us today. This has been one of the most enlivening interviews I've done. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's a joy, and thank you, Mariana, for all the work you do and for your wisdom. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So, to our listeners, I'd like you to consider joining us again next Saturday. I am going to be interviewing for the second time Parker Palmer, whose most recent book, Healing the Heart of Democracy has been for me the single most influential written document to guide me in how to understand and take my rightful place in the world of politics in these, I guess, contentious times. It's hopeful, practical, insightful, this book. And there's one chapter in the book in which I want to explore more deeply with Parker, which is called Life in the Company of Strangers. So I contacted him and asked him if he'd be willing to come back on a second time, and that's what we're and he said yes. He kindly said yes. So in this chapter, Parker makes the case that human diversity, freely expressed, can strengthen our democracy. However, by nature, humans tend to tribe with those who are similar. But if we want to experience the resilience or creativity or adaptability or strength that diversity can offer us, we must actively seek opportunities to invite other into our lives. So in the book, Parker talks about generous practices of the heart that are at the heart of inviting other into our lives. Things like hospitality, the power of hospitality, the incredible power of being still and silent and listening to another story, sharing meals, just food, the sharing of food. So since Bread for the Journey is really about generosity and we're talking about that and how to create more of that in this world, to live in a democratic society, I thought we might talk a little bit about that, and together we can find create the place where we can share what we have in common with those we think of as other. And so that really is the topic for next week's conversation. I hope you'll join us. And finally, I'd like to say our small nonprofit Bread for the Journey asks for your help. With this economic downturn, our coffers are really in need of replenishment. We've got about $90,000 that we need to raise. And if you'll go to Bread for the Journey's website, on the front you'll see the thermometer. Throughout the site you can learn about the work that we're doing. And so we ask, if you can find a place in your heart to support the work of Bread for the Journey, please do. Please go to our website at breadforthejourney.org. I believe that if everyone pitches in a little bit or a lot, we can change the world one person at a time. So I thank you. My board of directors thanks you. And all those who receive grants from Bread for the Journey and all of our chapters, thank you. And I close with these few words. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free. See you next week.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.